This is Cincinnati Edition. I'm Mark Purcell. What happens with the economy now that President Obama has been reelected? John Dorfman is on the money with Chris DeSimio to take a look at the possibilities.
It was a volatile week on Wall Street last week as the market tiptoed a little higher on Monday and had a big rally on Tuesday, Election Day, only to decline more than 300 points on Wednesday, falling more than 100 points on Thursday. Yesterday morning, some of the economic indicators weren't all so bad. They were able to shrug off the concerns about the European Central Bank's ominous warnings of weakness in Germany and fears of the fiscal cliff, which haunted the markets on Wednesday and Thursday, instead focused on the highest consumer confidence reading in quite some time. That was reported just after about 10 o'clock yesterday morning, and that turned the market around, at least in the early going. Well, it's a pleasure to welcome back to the show our friend John Dorfman, who is the chairman of Thunderstorm Capital Management in Boston. John, a regular, frequent appearances on CNBC, and now his column carried by the Pittsburgh Tribune. John, thanks so much for taking time from your weekend to be with us.
Oh, it's lovely to be with you.
So, John, your thoughts on the market's reaction to the election?
I was interested in this because I've been saying for several months that 2013 actually could be a pretty good year if Congress does something halfway reasonable about the issues summarized under the name the fiscal cliff, which are the automatic spending cuts and the automatic tax increases that will take effect with force unless Congress does something more planned and less mechanistic. So Boehner and Obama both realize that some compromise is necessary or the markets are going to punish the economy. And I think they will try hard to reach a compromise. I hope that Boehner can rally the Republicans in his camp and Obama can do the same with the Democrats in his camp and do something intelligent and constructive. And it doesn't take a genius settlement, but it takes some kind of settlement to make the markets perk up.
Speaking of perking up, there were certain parts of the market, even in Wednesday's decline, that didn't get spanked as hard as others, some of the consumer staples companies. Was this the market betting on Congress not getting its act together, or were these just the kind of things that make people feel good anyway?
That's just flight to safety. You know, Procter & Gamble will always sell Pampers and Kleenex will always sell tissues, no matter what. And so the groups that are considered most defensive are consumer staples, utilities, healthcare. But healthcare is not acting as defensive as the others now because of all the controversy over Obamacare and the new rules. So I think it's just a flight to safety that you saw.
You have long championed some of the basic industry, even some mining companies. Are there areas of some of that sector, are there little subsegments that might do well even if, even in a heightened regulatory environment?
Well, right now, the Fed and its equivalents in Europe and in Japan are all expanding the money supply. So here in Europe and in Japan, you're seeing the currency being, in essence, cheapened by issuing more dollars, more yen, more euros. And when that happens, it is likely, in my opinion, that gold will go up. And so the metals that I'm most interested in are gold miners. And the gold miners I'm most interested in are the big producers because China and India buy a lot of gold for their sovereign wealth funds and the ETFs, exchange-traded funds, that specialize in gold own or claim to own physical gold to back up every share they sell. So they have to buy physical gold from someone. So I think companies like Newmont and Barrick, both of which I own for clients, should be good bets in 2013.
So if you had to invest in a metal, you would prefer gold. And if you had to own gold, you would prefer either the miners over the exchange-traded fund or the bullion?
Well, I would. For the past, I think it's 3 years, I'm not sure of the exact period, bullion has outperformed the miners. And that makes some sense because it costs a lot of money to get gold out of the ground. You have to sift through a tremendous amount of dirt to get 1 ounce of gold, and that requires moving huge amounts of dirt, which requires lots and lots of energy. And since energy prices have been in a ragged uptrend, miners' costs have been rising. So bullion has outperformed the miners for quite a while, and I think it's probably for 3 years. And now I think that that will begin to equalize or reverse, and I'm guessing that next year the miners will outperform the bullion.
You know, the market participants had been paying attention to, and in fact, this has been going on for a little while now, the science of sabermetrics, which, of course, it was a commodity trader named John Henry who hired the founder of the science, the dismal science of baseball statistical analysis, and Bill James, I believe it was his name. And he immediately, on behalf of the Boston Red Sox, broke the curse of the Bambino, the nearly 100-year drought in World Series that Boston had. And, of course, it was the latest superstar in the world of sabermetrics is Nate Silver, who has called most of the states correctly, if not all of them, depending on when Florida comes in with their returns. And yet you talk about your purloined portfolio, like baseball players watching the scoreboard to see how the rivals are doing, you say in your column. I like to keep an eye on other money managers. So are these? Tell us about your purloined portfolio and which of these money managers, without mentioning the specific funds, but people could figure that out, but which of these portfolio managers' purloined picks have done the best?
I will tell you a couple of the managers I most respect, and they include David Dreeman, who was my mentor in this business, and they include Randall Ely, a money manager in Northern Virginia. They include Ken Huebner here in Boston, where I live, and several others. And, you know, Chris, I have not done a study to see over the years that I've been writing a column about the purloined portfolio, which managers' picks have consistently done the best. But that's a great idea. So the next time you have me on your show, I will have done that analysis, and I'll be able to tell you.
Yeah. Well, some of these managers, some of these companies are big, big names, pharmaceuticals such as Johnson & Johnson and some big large-cap technologies companies such as Intel, are names, not to make toss those out as recommendations, of course, but are some of these names so widely followed that all the upside has been squeezed out of them, or is it possible to find segments of the market where well-known names might still produce surprisingly pleasant returns?
The latter, I think, Chris. There certainly are times when all the hopes and expectations have been built into a stock, and it's difficult for it to rise more. And Apple is a fascinating case in point. It may indeed rise more, but my guess is it will be a market performer or a little less because people had come to regard it as invincible. But right now, the mood of investors, in my opinion, is still pretty gloomy. People were so shocked and torn up by the events of 2008 and the year before and the year after and then the weak recovery following in 2010, 2011, 2012, that they're very gun-shy, very cautious. People have a tremendous amount in bonds, which is, in my personal opinion, a mistake because of interest rates rise. Bonds are vulnerable to capital losses. And they're leery of the equity market. So some of the big stocks, including Johnson & Johnson, which you mentioned, and which I own for several clients, I think are still undervalued.
You know, in these large cap names, these big names have, you know, they get all the press. They get a lot of the press. And yet, one of your recent columns in the Pittsburgh Tribune talks about some of these smaller companies that might be off a lot of people's radar screens. Many of them are either in the home building business or cater to home builders. The housing stocks themselves seem to have turned around and perhaps may get a boost from the activity that might be coming from the rebuilding of the New York, Pennsylvania, New Jersey area. What are some of your thoughts on how investors can position funds inside their portfolio to take advantage of the economic activity that's likely to happen?
Well, there's two main ways. The home builders themselves, and I do like that group, and the home furnishings companies. And I think both groups are well worth researching. What makes it hard to buy home builders now is their balance sheets have been torn to shreds during, four bad years. And I personally don't like to buy stocks of companies where debt is greater than equity, which describes most of the home builders now. So when I go to buy a home builder, I look for the ones with the stronger balance sheets, and one that I own for many clients is NVR. And people who are less squeamish than I am about debt can choose from quite a wide variety of them. And I think the whole group has considerably farther to run.
Well, John, you offer once again some wonderful insight for us. I want to thank you so much for taking time away from your duties there at Thunderstorm Capital Management in Boston. Thank you so much, John Dorfman.
Thank you, Chris.
And for Cincinnati Edition, I'm Chris DeSimio on The Money.